The second chapter begins with the famous conversation between Drupta Balaki, the learned sage, and King Ajatashatru, about which we have been studying recently. The conversation actually hinging upon the subject of the conditioned Brahman and the unconditioned Brahman, the formed or the manifested aspect of reality and the unconditioned or the absolute nature of it. The learned Khoster insisting upon the forms of manifestation as objects of meditation, and the king, who was more educated in this line, emphasizing on the other hand that no form, no particular manifestation can be regarded as complete in itself unless its universal background is also taken into consideration. So, the whole conversation between these two persons is on the particular theme of recognizing the universal in every particular mode of manifestation. So, that is the essence of this conversation between Balaki and Ajatashatru. There is then, we have the interesting and enigmatic instruction that everything that is cosmic is also present in the individual. What is in the Brahmanda is in the Pindanda. The great sages, Vishwamitra, Bharadvaja, Vasishtha, Atri, Gautama, etc. are all in our own bodies. They are superintending over the different limbs of our personality. They are situated in our own senses. And even the gods themselves can be located in the eye itself. The various parts of the eye, which is the subtlest manifestation of our body, are presided over by certain subtle divinities or gods, so that in our own selves we can locate the cosmic realities and God can be realized in our own selves. The Upanishad tells us that the five elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, can be classified into the mortal and the immortal, the murta and the amurta, as the Upanishad calls it, which can be converted into objects of meditation for purposes of harmony between the individual and the cosmic. Then the quintessential teaching is given to us in the famous conversation between Maitreyi and Yajnavalkya, which is towards the end of the second chapter. This is the universal message that the Upanishad gives us. All loves are loves for God. Every satisfaction is a satisfaction that comes by contact with God. And every affection, whatever be its nature, is a tendency towards God. And no one loves anything except for the sake of this universal self present in that particular object. Nava are sarvasya kamaya sarvam pram bhavati, atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. This is the greatest truth that can ever be proclaimed, but it is also the most difficult thing that anyone can afford to understand. That which we are called upon to visualize as an object of attraction is the universal absolute. It is the infinite summoning the infinite, as it were, when the subject and the object pull each other for the purpose of personal evaluations. The evaluation is ultimately a universal one. It is the presence and the recognition of the universal in the particular that evokes satisfaction. But on account of the preponderance of the clamor of the senses and the urges of the lower mind, the activity of the universal subtly present in this contact of the subject with the object is missed always. So that the sudden happiness that comes on account of affections is always miscalculated and projected upon an object of sense, because of the inability of the senses and the mind to recognize the presence of the universal in the particular, which flash forth in a moment's existence, as it were, at the time of this contact. The universal never manifests itself wholly in the particulars. it is manifest only when there is a forgetfulness of personality. Whenever there is a tendency to forget your own self, there is the tendency to experience of happiness also. The more you forget yourself, the more are you happy. And this tendency to forget oneself is the tendency of the universal to manifest itself in you as a particular. When it is consciously experienced, it becomes yoga practice. But when it is unconsciously experienced, it becomes a rapture of the senses and a desire of the mind which is binding in its nature. So Yajnavalkya tells Maitreyi, all affections, all love, all attractions, all pleasures, all happiness, anything that you like in this world is ultimately your tendency to like the absolute. And it is the absolute casting its shadow, as it were, on the various objects of sense which you have mistaken for vehicles of your satisfaction. This universal has neither a subjective side nor an objective side. Yatra idvaitami bhavati tatitara itaram pasyati yatra tvaiva atmaiva abhuti tatra kyanakam pasyati. When the universal is lost sight of, when the particular alone is visualized, then it is that we miss the awareness of the particular location of the happiness that comes at the time of the contact of the subject with the object. But when we are awakened to the awareness of this universal, you will see that it is neither a subject nor an object. That state of awareness is called consciousness of Brahman or Brahma Sakshatkar.
In our review of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishads, we have come up to the point of the end of the second chapter, where the great sage Dadhinch is supposed to have imparted the knowledge of what the Upanishad calls Madhuvidya, or the knowledge of the interconnectedness of things. Usually, consciousness and object are regarded as exclusive of each other. The one cannot be in the position of the other. The perceiver is consciousness and the object is what is experienced by consciousness. The two are categorized as two distinct characters in the field of experience. But the Madhuvidya gives us a revolutionary idea in respect of what we usually regard as a field of the duality of subject and object, where the subject is, the object cannot be, and vice versa. The object cannot be the subject, and the subject cannot be the object. Consciousness cannot be matter, and matter cannot be consciousness. This is our usual notion of things and our practical experience. But the Madhuvidya is an insight into the nature of things, which reveals that there are no such things as subjects or objects. They are only notional conclusions of individual subjects from their own particular points of view. The one regarding the other as the object, so that there is a vast world of objects to a single individual perceiver, while this is the case to every other perceiver also. The fact of experience itself is a refutation of the phenomenal notion that subjects are cut off from objects, as if the one has no connection with the other qualitatively. If there has been a gulf of difference, unbridgeable, between the experiencing consciousness and the object outside, there would be no such thing as experience. The great revelation of Dadhyang Atharvana is that the Adhyatma and the Adhibhuta are linked together by the Adhidaiva. A transcendent divine presence connects the phenomenal subject and the phenomenal object, so that we have a universe of interrelated particulars, one entering the other, one merging into the other, one coalescing the other, like the waves in the ocean. You do not know which enters the bubbles of what. This experience is the revelation of the sage Dadhyanj, a knowledge, Madhvidya, which he is supposed to have imparted to Indra and to the Ashwins and to the other sages through them. The significance of the word Madhu in this term Madhvidya is that everything is the essence of everything. Madhu is honey, which symbolizes the quintessential essence of everything. The basic reality of all things is called Madhu in this Vidya. The essence of everything is also the essence of everything else. Whatever is the basic quality, the reality, the fundamental being of anything is also the fundamental being of everything else. That means to say, there is no prerogative on the part of any particular individual in respect of anything. There is no superior qualitative excellence in any object or any subject. It is only a point of view that is called a subject. It is only a point of view that is also called an object. So, if the points of view are lifted to a universal point of view, there would be neither subjects nor objects. In a universal expanse of experience, certain aspects are isolated from others, and each aspect is emphasized from its own point of view. This particular point of view of a particular aspect of the total reality is called an individual subject, to which everything else stands in the position of an object. But this is not the correct point of view, because it is an abstraction of the total. So, Madhvidya reveals to us the truth of the immanence of the reality that is universal in every particular, so that there can neither be an ultimate cause nor an ultimate effect in a world of mutual dependence and correlativity of things. So, Madhvidya is the knowledge of the correlativity of the subject and the object in such a way that they merge one into the other, cancelling the subjectness and the objectness of each, embracing each other in a union of their particularities and revealing their inner essence called the Madhu. This applies to everything that is outside in the world called Adhibhuta, everything that is inside Adhyatma, and everything that is transcendent, Adhidaiva. From three points of view, the sage describes the correlativity of everything in the universality of being. This is the conclusion of the second chapter.